Coming up on Golf Today, there's golf being played in the state of Florida, so we're going to show you, courtesy of our video recording, some of those players out on the actual golf course from today and even yesterday. Plus, the great Roger Malfi stops by the program as the NBC crew gets prepped for the Florida swing. We'll tee Roger up on PGA National and Honda Week. And two times a champion already in this wraparound season, Hideki Matsuyama turns 30 today. It's a big birthday, so we dedicate a big segment to the big man and why we feel Hideki's underrated when discussing the current superstars of the PGA Tour. It's National Clam Chowder Day today. Is that the red or the white? Golf Today, up right now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Wonderful look at PGA National. Over to the Honda Classic, day two. Action underway, birdies being made. We'll show you some of those highlights in just a bit as the PGA Tour moves to Florida. Shane Bacon with Eamon Lynch. And Eamon, I have a lot of ridiculously stupid ideas. I'm going to present you one if you're okay with that. It's Honda Week. And I always feel like brands could incorporate some of their terminology into the events they're actually doing. You know, one of my big things I've talked about for a long time is when there's a playoff and you're a car company sponsoring an event, they should have mini cars as the golf carts that drive the players out to the playoff holes. Why don't they call the cut line this week the Ridge Line, the Honda Ridge Line? Well, he's on the Ridge Line. He's at plus two.
You know, I think right now, Shane, I would be suffering less if I had my golf clubs and was out at PGA National rather than trying to explain that idea to the American people.
I think it works, though, don't you? Now you've got the name of the car just right in the vernacular.
I guarantee you there's somebody at PGA Tour headquarters writing a memo and not now listening to you.
Hey, Honda, Venmo me, if you will. We're excited about the action out at the Honda Classic. We've got some action for you already today. Daniel Berger making some moves. Making some birdies. Here he is at the 13th, the par four. This from just outside of 100 yards. Just over the
flag. Nestles it in there to 13 feet for birdie.
If it didn't say 13 feet on the sheet, do you think you would have said 13 feet? Do you think that would have looked more like 20 feet?
It looked a little longer to me.
Okay, I agree with you on that. I never know how far they are.
I'd be good at selling real estate.
I don't think anybody truly knows how far they are just looking at it. Always feels shorter or longer. He cashes it 13 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet, whatever it was. That got him to six under par now at the 14th, the par four. Not a great tee shot. Got a little lucky. See if he takes advantage.
Comes out pretty clean. That's going to be a good shot.
He's not having to worry about the ridge line this week. See? See what I did there? Yeah, I just already incorporated it.
Excellent.
And you didn't even make a noise or anything.
He saved his par there, remained at six under.
Here he is at the 15th. Greenside bunker.
An uncharacteristically sloppy shot for a guy who leads the tour in sand save percentage.
Like I said earlier, I thought 10 feet.
He's got this putt to save his par. This from 16 feet. That would not drop. It'll be his first bogey of the tournament. That impressive considering the event and the golf course. Drops him back to five under par. How about Chris Kirk here at the 14th, the par four? Just off the green.
Coming off a solid top 15 in Phoenix.
Well done. Saves par.
Stays at five under.
Here's Berger. This is for birdie. That was 17 feet. See, it's 13.
It did look longer.
It's right around that range all day. Never know. I'll go to 18, the par five, greenside bunker. Now, Ari Marcus, who did these shot sheets, who did the sheets we look at for all the information, wrote just a few feet away that bunker shot. Now, I need exact feet, Ari. I need 5, 10, 12, 16. Here's Chris Kirk at 17. That for birdie, that would drop. Get him to six under par. Now at the 18th.
The par five, second shot from 245 yards.
Out in the water, make bogey, drop back to five under. Here's Daniel Berger at the second. This is the par four. Short right of the green.
Would save par. Remain at seven under.
That was wonderful from Mr. Berger. Chris Kirk at the first after that bogey at the par five, trying to bounce right back. This one 155.
an aggressive shot to 10 feet.
He'd make that for a birdie. So nice bounce back for Chris Kirk. And here's Daniel Berger. Par 5. Nice touch there. Some pretty good pitch shots today for Mr. Daniel Berger. He would make that for a birdie. Get him to 8 under par. He is playing solid golf to this point. Our leader by a couple is Daniel Berger. Chris Kirk there as well. Kurt Kitayama at 6 under par played flawless golf on Thursday. And Rory Sabatini at 5 under par. So you've seen some highlights from today. Kurt Kitayama kind of getting off to that start you want at this golf course. It seems like one of those tournaments, one of those golf courses where you can make serious waves on Thursday and Friday, considering how this is a place that typically players come back on the weekend.
It really is a place players come back on the weekend. It's the hardest score, winning score every year on average over the last 10 years on the entire Florida swing. But yesterday to me was the perfect example of how fickle a mistress this game is, Shane, because we talked about how difficult it is and how much accuracy matters, how much trouble is waiting out there. Respectively, Peter Uihlein, Patrick Rogers and Bo Hostler were 3 under, 2 under and 1 under par yesterday. They are the 3 crookedest guys on the PGA Tour. They are ranked 214th, 215th and 216th in driving accuracy on the PGA Tour. There is no one who hits it offline more than those 3 guys, and all of them shot under par here yesterday.
Somehow shot under par, somehow avoided water, which feels like it's on every single hole. But I want to go back to Kurt Kitayama, considering what he did in that opening round. It's a player that we don't talk a ton about in terms of PGA Tour. He's a guy that has made some noise on the PGA Tour throughout his career. A look at Kurt Kitayama as we get to know the young man. Just 29 years old, ranked 289th in the world, first year on the PGA Tour. Turned pro back in 2015, 4 years at UNLV. He's nicknamed The Project for his days back at UNLV for all of the grinds he made in terms of swing changes at Southern Highlands. Best career PGA Tour finish, T17th in Puerto Rico back in 2017. And he talked about this after his opening round. He said, I know I've been missing cuts, but the game feels like it's been trending in the right direction. This is last 5 starts. You talk about players missing fairways. This is a guy that's been missing cut after cut after cut and comes in here and shoots 64 at arguably the toughest course on the tour.
And I know occasionally that we actually see some guys who outperform their season-long statistics. He really outperformed his statistics for the season yesterday.
Yeah, we'll take a look at his Thursday. This at the fourth, the par four. This is 133, already 3 under par at this point.
Nestles this in there to a couple of feet. Gets to 4 under.
Anything under par. A solid start at the Honda, now at the par 3 fifth.
We talked about yesterday as one of the toughest stretches out here, 5, 6, and 7, that's, and that's right. A good way to start it.
The birdie's the fifth, now to the sixth. Another putt for birdie. Iron play fantastic in round 1. That one drops as well. We get him to 6 under, a 64 for Kurt Kitayama. A look at how he played in round 1 in terms of the stats. Gross game tee to green, first in the field. Very impressive there. Hit 11 fairways, hit 14 greens. Needed just 26 putts, and you add all that up together, and typically is a solid round, a 64. And again, sometimes, especially these days on the PGA Tour, you shoot 64 in round 1, you feel like you got to follow it up with 66, 67 in round 2. That's not the case today for a player like Kurt Kitayama. If he shoots even par, he's going to be in the hunt on the weekend.
Oh, yeah. People will move back quickly at a golf course like this. And we just saw that he was ranked first yesterday in strokes gained tee to green. Compare that to his actual season so far, where he's 184th. And then that actually recurs as a theme in his profile. He was third in strokes gained off the tee yesterday. He was 188th for the year. His strokes gained around the green yesterday was 51. Doesn't sound that good, but it's 195 for the season. His strokes gained putting yesterday, he was 10th. For the season, he's 196th. So he is radically outperforming what he has. And this is a guy who clearly has a lot of belief in himself. I mean, he played point guard on a state championship winning basketball team when he was 5'6" in California. This is a guy who's clearly got a lot of belief in himself.
A lot of belief in himself, and obviously kind of having a day that doesn't really match up with the year he has had. We showed the 5 missed cuts coming in to the Honda, but this happens, especially when the field isn't what it was at Riviera. I mean, when you have a field where a lot of the top players aren't around, you're going to get these opportunities if you're a professional golfer, if you're a PGA Tour player looking for some successes or just simply looking for a positive. I mean, we're not going to sit here on Monday talking about Kurt Kitayama's Thursday leading to victory, but if it does, that's great. But Kurt Kitayama's Thursday could lead to a top 20 or a top 25 or even a top 30, and those are building blocks for players that are struggling. You miss five cuts. You're trying to find a positive. I talked to James Hahn about this one year. Remember when he won the Wells Fargo after miscut, after miscut, after miscut? His whole mentality then was just trying to find something positive and not looking at the negatives when the breaks don't go your way. This was a very positive round. I mean, you're leading after round one. But again, going on to victory isn't necessarily the end goal. It's trying to find something positive to build on it the rest of the year, considering it's early in 2022.
Yeah, and we can talk about how these events that have a slightly more diluted feel these days because of where it falls in the schedule, that you're not really playing against the toughest guys in the world out there this week. But that's almost incidental to the fact that he is playing one of the toughest golf courses
right.
in the world this week. And I think the confidence he can get from performing well either over one day or over 4 days on a golf course that is as famously difficult as this one, that adds as much confidence as had he played well last week at Riviera against a much stronger field, I think.
And he's going to have to battle names like Daniel Berger, who we just showed very much in the hunt, playing some great golf. Chris Kirk, who has played great golf in 2021 into 2022. So an exciting opening round for Kurt Kitayama, hoping he can keep it going. Well, coming up, Eamon Lynch has promised to sing in full the happy birthday song for Hideki. The man turns 30 today. You prepare? You bring your tuning fork?
I think my voice won't hold up that long.
It's 2 or 3 minutes of Eamon singing. That all next on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life.
Back on Golf Today. Today is Mr. Hideki Matsuyama's birthday. 30 years old for the 8-time PGA Tour champ, reigning Masters champion. Hideki already has 2 wins this season. The first coming at the Zozo in the fall. Then in January, won the Sony Open with what I'm going to say one of the shots of the year, even if it comes in January. This is the 3-wood from 276 in the playoff. Didn't really see where it ended up, but he knew it was going to end up close. What an approach. What a way to end it. Walk-off eagle for Hideki. Two victories, two trophies. We're not even to March yet. That's what you like to see from one of the great young talents in the game. You still call him young when he's 30?
Younger than us.
Still plays? That's fine with me. Let's dive into the CDW Intelligence Center. Go beyond the scorecard using ShotLink statistics. Take a look at Hideki's season to this point. Mention the two victories, of course, ranked first on tour in that department. Top tens, he's got 4. That's tied for first. He's 9 for 9 in terms of cuts made. Him and Russell Henley, the only two players to go 9 for 9. And that scoring average, 68.3, has him 12th on tour. Interesting when you dive into Hideki, reigning Masters champion, when you look at the odds at the first men's major of the year, and Hideki is well down the list. You see John Rahm, the favorite according to PointsBet, Colin Morikawa right there, DJ and Jordan Spieth, former Masters champions, top of the board there, JT, Rory, Brooks, Bryson. You got to go to plus 2800 to find Hideki's name. What we saw last year at Augusta National, what we saw from Hideki, and how comfortable he's been around Augusta National throughout his career. I'd say those numbers are a bit surprising. Of course, when you look at numbers, you have to factor in a lot more things than just who they think is actually going to win the golf tournament. It's what the public might be interested in laying their money on. But Hideki's down the list with some names that haven't won at Augusta National or maybe aren't even in the form going into it.
The disrespect of our friends at PointsBet is staggering here. It's not just the record at Augusta that Hideki has. There are at least 5 guys on that list who haven't even won in about a year, whereas Hideki's got 2 wins already this season and will be defending his title. And to me, that was one of the great moments last year, not just his win, but the gesture by his caddy on the 18th green afterwards. So there's got to be a certain sentimentality to to Hideki going after the back-to-back Masters win this year, which obviously no one's done in 20 years since Tiger.
Yeah, 8 PGA Tour wins, of course, the major. He's 4-1 in playoffs throughout his career. He's finished in the top 6 in every major championship to this point. And something that I love to look at is how are the players winning? When you're playing your best golf, how do you win? Do you run away from the field? Can you dominate? Hideki has 3 wins of the 8 by 5 shots or more. Spieth, who has 12 PGA Tour wins, has 1 win of 5 shots or more. Same for Justin Thomas. Same for Bryson DeChambeau, who has 8 wins as well, the same as Hideki. Hideki's best is pretty darn salty. When Hideki goes out there and is really locked in for 4 days, he does have that level of talent where he can run away from the best in the field no matter who's there.
And he's often locked in from tee to green. We keep talking a lot about Hideki's putting, and we talk about it for a particular reason. I mean, from 4 to 8 feet, which is kind of a fairly important distance, at least in terms of birdie percentage on the PGA Tour, Hideki makes 67.27%. The tour leader is Peter Uihlein at 88% from that range. But when the putter is on, Hideki is very, very close to unbeatable. When you look at his statistics from the Sony, he gained almost 7 strokes on the field tee to green, and he almost also gained 7 strokes with his putter. But when you look then again at the Farmers, he gained over 5 strokes tee to green, but he lost 2.5 strokes with his putter and finished T30 that week. So the putter really, as the putter goes, Hideki's week goes.
Hideki's one of those ball strikers, those elite ball strikers, where it simply comes down to the short game. We've talked about it with Victor Hovland before. When Victor Hovland pitches the golf ball well, he's going to be in contention. We've obviously talked about it with Colin Morikawa and the putter. And, of course, we've talked about it with Justin Thomas and the putter as well. When they putt well, they're going to contend and potentially win. But for Hideki, it's when he putts well, there's a chance he might run away from everybody. I do find it interesting talking about Hideki and the theory of being underrated, because we're thinking about Hideki as American golf fans. Hideki is not underrated worldwide. Hideki is an absolute superstar. I do think he gets lost a little bit when you kind of compare him to some of the American stars that we present and we talk about so often. And when you look at the odds for the Masters and you see Hideki down the list, I'd say a lot of that is historically based. I mean, 3.5% of the time at the Masters, we've seen repeat winners, and that's it. I mean, it's only happened 3 times, and you've got to go Jack, Nick Faldo, and Tiger Woods, and the last time it happened was 2001 and 2002. It just doesn't happen that much. Players don't, you know, they don't defend their title at the Masters often, if ever. So that, in that term, it makes sense that Hideki's down the list. But I don't find Hideki underrated when you think about Hideki as a global superstar. I think Hideki is properly rated, and I think when you move outside of the United States, you realize how big of a superstar this guy really is.
He's certainly underrated on the betting list for the Masters. If you looked at Bryson, was on that list ahead of him. Bryson would even acknowledge himself. I'm sure he's got a pretty lousy record at Augusta National. It's the one course on
still
tour.
Still trying to figure it out, is what he says.
It's the one course on tour they have never allowed green reading books, which don't happen anywhere now, but they weren't allowed at all at the Masters, and that may have contributed to Bryson's issues out there. Hideki is not underrated. I think there's a certain cultural bias because English isn't his language, and he's not exactly a loud character at all. You know, Hideki's never going to win the Player Impact program. He's not going to get a dime out of that program at all. And in a way, that's to his credit. You know, he's got his stature outside of the United States. His game makes enough noise in the United States probably to get more attention than he's getting.
8 times a winner, including the major championship at the Masters, first men's major ever for a Japanese player. I mean, when you think about Hideki's trajectory at just 30 years of age, I think if you polled us in the morning, how old is Hideki Matsuyama, considering how much we've talked about him for the last decade, it's feel like he's been around for a long, long time. But this is a guy that could potentially double that number. I mean, you could see 16, 17, 18 wins in his career. You could see 2 to 3 major championships. I think that's the level of talent. When I go back and watch that Saturday, that second night at Augusta National, and the iron play performance that Hideki put on, it was, to me, the best performance of the year in terms of a player just simply like letting everything go. I mean, just kind of almost blacking out on the golf course and swinging the way only Hideki can swing. I mean, you start at the 11th when he didn't hit a great drive, and really from the 11th through the rest of the round, it was dart after dart after dart, and that is what Hideki's able to do. He is one of those go-low guys. He's one of those guys that can get out of his own way, and not every professional golfer is capable of doing that, getting out of your way when you feel locked in and shooting 29 or 30 on a back nine at a major championship.
It's easy to forget that at this point last year, Shane, we were talking about all of these great players who were in slumps and weren't doing anything. Hideki was in a slump. He hadn't won in 3.5 years. Lydia Ko was in a slump. Jordan Spieth was in a slump. They all were on a very long dry spell. All of them ended it within a few weeks of each other last spring. But Hideki lost some pretty golden years there from the age of, you know, 26 and a right. half up to the point where he is now 30. He's clearly re-established himself as one of the best players in the world. It's still surprising to me in a way that he's as low down as 10th in the world rankings, because his game is so much more consistent than most guys out there.
He doesn't have to say a lot. We don't have to say a lot. We know his game can scream at times when you get a chance to watch Hideki really, really locked in. That was the CDW Intelligence Center. And when Golf Today returns, we head back out to PGA National. We'll be joined by the great Roger Maltby. We're back on Golf Today. Roger Maltby, one of the great voices in golf, just one of the great dudes in golf, really. Five-time winner on the PGA Tour between 1975 and 1985. 55, count them, 55 top 10 finishes in his career on the tour. Began working as an on-course reporter for NBC Sports in 1991. This week, he makes his season return at the Honda Classic. Always exciting when Roger is on the call. Roger joins us right now, and great to see you back out for another season, one of the best to ever do it, and you return to a golf course that feels a little bit like an outlier on the PGA Tour, a true brute. How does PGA National feel so demanding for these players?
Well, it, as you say, it is a brute. You know, to get around this golf course, there's a lot of windmills and dragons out there, water everywhere you look, and to avoid disasters is really key here. Certainly when you're talking the bear trap, 15, 16, 17, lots of bad things can happen. So there's a lot to navigate here. If there's, the wind is up, it's a demanding golf course. And I think the players like the challenge. I really do. It's not going to be a real low-scoring affair. And I think ball striking is rewarded in a big way here. So I think it's popular with the players that play here.
With all of that in mind, Roger, with the premium on ball striking and a certain sense of grittiness, who do you look at this week as somebody who's probably worth looking at as a potential winner on Sunday afternoon?
Well, you know, I'm going out with Brooks Koepka this afternoon, and I think he's the kind of player that just relishes difficult condition. I would expect him to keep putting up solid rounds, and I think when we get to the end, he'll be in the mix. That would be my thought.
Roger, does this week feel a bit like a throwback week? I mean, in terms of strategy for these players, it just doesn't feel like people are grabbing driver after driver after driver like you see at other tour events.
Yeah. I mean, it's a golf course that requires placement and strategy. It's a place where if you play boldly, which they do love to do now, and perform, you can gain great advantage. But you also bring big numbers into play. So I think players wisely and frequently will hit less than driver to ensure that they avoid some of the windmills and dragons I was referring to earlier, and just try to keep the ball in play, and you just have to manage this golf course.
Roger, we mentioned you've been doing this now for 30 years as an announcer after a long playing career. I'm sure you've seen a lot of remarkable shots in your time walking the golf course behind these players. What's the most memorable shot you've seen in your days as an announcer?
Oh, my goodness. It's like trying to pick your favorite kid. one that stands out to me and always will was the 2000 U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. Tiger Woods on the sixth hole had put the ball in the right rough, and we had seen players put it in the right rough before. It's a par five where the players drive out. Stillwater Cove is to the right, bunker's left, and then you play up a hill, blind shot to the green for your second. Either lay up short of the green on top or go for the green. He was in the right rough, and we had seen player after player that had put it over there, had just pitched the ball out sideways to the fairway and played a very long blind shot up toward the green in three. Well, he walked in there, and he moved heaven and earth. I mean, grass flew everywhere, and the ball came up over the hill, ran up onto the edge of the green, and I said, it's just not a fair fight. When you watch players, and this is the thrill I still get from it, and you watch them hit shots that you know there are only a handful of people in the world, including professional golfers, and they hit the shot and pull it off, I mean, it's, I still get goosebumps. You know, the hair on my arms goes up. And I mean, it's never stopped being fun watching the best in the world do what they do.
Roger,
that's the PGA Tour week in and week out.
Roger, going back to following Tiger in those early days, the late 90s into the early 2000s, because now we see these crazy athletic guys out on the PGA Tour that can hit it forever, and they can hit those types of shots like you're talking about at Pebble Beach. But Tiger was the outlier back in the late 90s and early 2000s in that department. What was it like watching and observing Tiger go about his business, knowing he was one of those guys that could pull off those types of shots that nobody else on the PGA Tour could pull off?
Well, it was thrilling. It was thrilling to watch, and you knew. I mean, Jack Nicklaus was the dominant player of his time, no doubt. And he was better, little better, than the competition. Back in the late 90s and around 2000, there was a huge difference between Tiger and what was next. The gap was unbelievable. He was out driving guys 30 yards. I mean, the difference in power and the things he could do on the golf course, he stood alone. And you knew when you watched him, if he played, you know, he'd refer to his A game and B game. If he played anywhere near his B game, or heaven forbid, his A game, it was over. You know, it really was. And so when all is said and done, I think I will reflect back on those years I got to watch Tiger, you know, starting and playing U.S. amateurs. His evolution as a player and what he became as a golfer was really something to watch, and I was more than thrilled to have a front row seat, to be honest with you.
Roger, you've had that front row seat to the best you've ever played. You've seen great shots, and when you're out there walking around, you're also going to see great players hit lousy shots, and it's got to give you a sense of perspective that you don't need to be perfect to succeed on the PGA Tour. Is that perspective you wish you'd had as a player, or did you have that kind of perspective as a player that you could survive with something short of excellent every week?
Right. Well, my particular skill levels, I had to be pretty good to compete at the highest places in a tournament. So I had to be on. But, yeah, the one thing you learn watching these great players is they don't hit every shot perfect. And they manage their games, and they don't make many mistakes. You watch guys like Jim Furyk. You know, you watch him play golf, and he has been a great player for a long time. Doesn't make many big mistakes, manages a golf course well. Every shot is not perfect, but they get through it. And I think, by and large, as a player, you feel more often that you have to be perfect, that you can't make a mistake. Mistakes happen, and you have to navigate them, and you have to get through them, and the best players, the guys who win, do that. Yeah, it becomes very apparent, Eamon. I think you're dead on the money.
Roger, do you have any moment where you were on the golf course and maybe you spoke a little too loud and a player maybe picked up on what you were saying or even heard what you were saying?
Oh, yeah. And was busted by none other than Tiger Woods. We were doing the President's Cup in George, South Africa, out in an early match. And we were out on a part of the golf course where there weren't too many fans. And I was on the call, and he was ready to play an approach shot to the green. And I thought I was being quiet enough, but he backed off the shot and looked at me with the camera dead on and said, "Come on, Roger." which is absolutely your worst nightmare. You know, I have been given the nickname of course whisperer. And the last thing, certainly as a former player, that you would want to do is to be overheard by a player or disturb a player while playing. It's your worst nightmare. You don't want to do it. So I got busted in front of everybody, and it was it was an embarrassing moment. Thank you. There have been a few. There's only been a couple.
Listen, we only bring up a negative moment on the golf course to praise you. You're one of the great listens. You make every telecast better, and we can't wait to hear you on the call at the Honda. Have a great week.
Thank you very much, Shane. You're very kind, Eamon. You guys have a good day.
the great, great Roger Maltby on the call for NBC Sports here in 2022 at the Honda, at the Bear Trap with Brooks Koepka. They're going to be great. Here's some updated action from the Honda on a Friday. Daniel Berger, fourth hole, par four. This is second from 123 yards. A nice little bounce.
Coming off a birdie on the third hole.
You see that kick down? See it kind of kick down of the hole? It's got those books. They tell you everything, right? All you got to do is execute. Got him to 9 under par. Now Chris Kirk for an eagle at the par 5 third.
Good enough for the top in. Gets him to 8 under par.
The Berger Kirk show on a Friday, isn't it? Daniel Berger making a run. He's at 9 under par. Chris Kirk at 8 under par. Single digit under par on Friday. That's when you know you're watching the line.
And they'll start to work back if that wind picks up over the weekend.
The other way. It'll move the other way. Some enormous names in the field they'll be able to watch a little bit later on golf. Should be exciting. After the break, we'll PGA Tour Champions Tour chat. That man, is he the favorite every week? He's not the favorite this week, which is surprising. We'll discuss the ageless one when Golf Today returns.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
We're back on Golf Today. This week, the PGA Tour Champions heads to my old stomping grounds, Tucson, Arizona, home to the number two ranked men's basketball team in all the land. The University of Arizona Wildcats playing great ball right now. My goodness. Let's send it out to the guys in Tucson.
Bob Pappo along with World Golf Hall of Famer Lanny Watkins, the eighth playing of the Kolegaard Classic. And Lanny, we have to go back to Naples, Florida last week. And Bernhard Langer goes wire to wire at 64 years of age, win number 43. There's no slowing down the Hall of Famer, is there?
There really isn't. And I got to tell you, Bob, I really didn't see it coming. I wasn't sure he was going to win again when he won last year. Then he wins the Schwab Cup. Coming out this year, going wire to wire, it was unexpected. I think his swing's gotten a touch shorter. He's not hitting it as far. But Bernhard Langer has figured out a way to play the game of golf, and he knows how to win, and that's what keeps coming to the forefront.
And Langer won here in 2020. Now, the defending champion is Kevin Sutherland. Mike Weir had the lead through 36 last year. Kevin Sutherland came back to beat him. But this is a star-studded field, starting with the brand ambassador, Jerry Kelly.
Jerry Kelly has played very well here every single year, and he played well last week in Naples. So look for Jerry Kelly to be a factor going forward this week. Then you've got to look at guys like Ernie Els and Retief Goosen, who both had good weeks last week, playing a lot of good golf, and a guy like Stephen Alker, who seems to play well every single week.
Yeah, Miguel Angel Jimenez, who won the season opener at Hualalai and then had a good Sunday last week, so his name is always in the equation. So we're standing on the tee at the 18th, and Lanny, we have seen over the years guys rinse it on the final hole and cost themselves opportunities to win. What makes this hole and this golf course so difficult?
If there's ever a hole that's going to have the pucker up factor, this is it right here. This thing is scary off the tee. Number one, it's probably the toughest tee shot on the PGA Tour Champions, particularly on the finishing hole. Water right. If you hit it down the left center, you hit the slope in the fairway going the water to the left. And then after you successfully do that, you've got one of the toughest greens to handle on the tour, PGA Tour Champions. Hard to get it close to the hole with your second, and a very difficult green to putt.
And one other thing, they've shortened the par 5 15th. They're playing it as a par 4 this year. So the Kolegaard Classic playing as a par 72 as opposed to par 73.
Got odds this week to Kolegaard from our friends at PointsBet. Stephen Alker plus 700. He's played in 12 events on PGA Tour Champions. He has 11 top 10s. He's a top 10 machine, as they like to say. Langer, who's been playing some great golf as he always does, plus 725. Jimenez there as well, as is Jim Furyk, Sutherland, and Ernie Els at plus 1,800. And the question is, Langer, should he be the favorite every week? I mean, is this a guy that should be the favorite? He seems like he wins every week.
I'm just kind of amused by our friends at PointsBet again, because Bernhard Langer had turned professional before Stephen Alker was born. And this is the champion.
You love going to the well on this.
He turned professional in 1972. But yeah, Langer's, I mean, he's kind of like the Betty White of golf. He just has a career that just seems to stretch on and on and on. And it's not just that he's won his 43 events and is chasing Hale Irwin. He's been runner-up 39 times. He's been second or third 25 times. 211 top 10 finishes in 296 career starts on the Champions Tour. In 36% of his career starts out there, he's been in the top three. How can you not make him the betting favourite every week, even at age 64?
Even with the numbers I read you from Stephen Alker, who's been playing some great golf since turning 50 years of age. You mentioned Langer's great success and the great percentages. And again, we talk a lot about this on this program because you can only win so often in this sport. It's really, really tough to win three, four times in a season, no matter what tour you're playing on. This was from the great Justin Ray on social media because a lot of people are talking about Langer and his success on PGA Tour Champions. He's won 14.5% of his starts on PGA Tour Champions. Tiger Woods on the PGA Tour has won 22.3% of the time. It's a credit to what Tiger was able to do, especially early in his career when it seemed like he won almost every week and at least would win four to five times in a season. It's a good comp in terms of what we've seen from Langer, and I'd like to see what he can do this year going into the next couple. We keep talking about when it's going to run out. I've used the Roger Federer comp before because people wrote Federer off multiple times and he went on to win more slams. I'll be interested to see if it ever does stop for this guy because there's not one part of the game that stands out, and that's what I find so interesting about the game. It's consistent. He drives it straight, but he doesn't drive it overly long. He hits his iron solid, but he's not the best iron player on PGA Tour Champions, and he's a very, very solid putter, but he's not the best putter out there. It just feels like all the tools work to be this consistent, and of course, the work ethic is there as well.
And in his defense in the Tiger statistical comparison, Tiger plays a lot more, in even at his peak, played a lot less, I should say.
Right.
Every year than Bernhard Langer does. You almost feel as though Bernhard Langer is playing two tournaments a week. Sometimes you see so much of him out there, particularly in the super season they've had over the last couple of years where he basically played every single tournament that was possible. But that's the benefit, I suppose, of being an empty nester at this point of life. But the one thing about Langer is nothing does stand out except from the neck up. This is a guy who's overcome the yips five times in his career. I once watched him five putt from 5 feet in an Open Championship. That's how bad it got for Bernhard Langer. And that kind of work ethic, the determination, none of the passion or joy or love of the game has ever lost him, even with it being his profession for 50 years. He still feels the same way about it.
It's a great point. I love bringing up the idea of a person that kind of overcomes something like the yips multiple times, obviously has the ability to somehow find something internally in their mind, the things that we struggle with. He obviously can block out on the golf course. I've just been so impressed by the longevity of the career. I mean, it's so hard to do this for this long. It's so hard to want to do this for so long. It's very, very easy to walk away from the game when you turn 50, 55, even 60 years of age. And it doesn't seem like he's slowing down. It doesn't seem like he has any interest in slowing down.
No, and he's also kept himself in remarkably good shape at the age of 64. So there's a certain point on the Champions Tour, the aches and the pains start to get worse. I remember Trevino telling me years ago that the greatest thing about the old days was when you woke up and you hurt and the ice was still melting in the glass beside you. That wasn't as good as you were going to feel that day, but now it was as good as he was going to feel that day. Langer feels as good and looks as good now in his mid-60s as he did 30 years ago. He doesn't have injuries. His body is not breaking down in any respect. So physically, you feel as though he could go on for a long time, but at a certain point, you got to start thinking he's got to be in the situation where he's got to pick and choose courses, where he's able to compete against these young guys.
When you change the ice from the cup to like a bag over your knee, you know that the age is really catching up with you. It happens to us all. Now time for a check-in on this date in history. This is an interesting one. We go back to 1995, Frank Sinatra performing for the last time at the Frank Sinatra Desert Classic Charity Golf Tournament. His last song, as you hear, the best is yet to come. I thought we were going to get a little more, Frank. I was kind of into it. All right, time to take your pick on whose best is yet to come this season, because we've talked a lot about great play in 2022, but we haven't seen excellent play from some of those players you'd expect to see dominating early in the season. Who's your pick to have a great season kind of this point going forward?
I don't know if it'll be a great season, but it should be a better season, at least. It's got to be Dustin Johnson to me. He's only made three starts this season. One of them was the CJ Cup last October in Vegas that Rory McIlroy won, and he was tied 45th that week. He showed up at the Farmers at Torrey Pines and tied for 35th, and then missed the cut recently Riviera, which is a course that he has historically played very well on. And if you look back at the last seven seasons of Dustin Johnson, he's compiled 69 top 10 finishes. He's basically running at the pace of 10 a year. We're already a third of the way through this PGA Tour season and he's got zero. And his game just looks kind of out of sorts, inattentive. I think his best, certainly for this season, has got to be ahead of him.
Especially with what we saw, when you think about the end of 2021, when we were kind of waiting for Dustin Johnson to get back to that play we saw at the end of 2020, it felt like it kind of come around the Ryder Cup. The celebrations following were obviously fun to watch, but the play from Dustin Johnson that week was a reminder of what we can see from Dustin Johnson when he's locked in. I mean, he was unbeatable that week.
Yeah, he won the Masters by five and shot 20 under par. And I guess, you know, the course was soft. It was in the fall. But he still shot 20 under par to
Dustin, else did.
Beat the best in the world by five. And since then, it's been nothing. He won in Saudi Arabia at the start of 2021. But since then, there's really been nothing. He hasn't really contended at any point since that Masters as well. He's logged a few top 10 finishes here and there last summer. But in terms of being in the mix where you expect Dustin Johnson to be, he's been absent without leave.
I have someone that did not have a bad 2021 as someone whose best is yet to come here in 2022, and that's Nelly Korda. I mean, Nelly Korda, we haven't seen the best of Nelly to this point yet. She hasn't won in 2022 after winning five times last season, including a major championship, including the Olympics in Tokyo. So, I mean, just kind of just going through the numbers and thumbing through some of the players that you're expecting stuff from this year, her game is too good not to contend. There's a lot of comps to Dustin Johnson's game, in my opinion, with Nelly Korda. She's so dominant throughout the bag that she's able to go out there and win, and she will win because the game is so good and it's so complete and she can hit the ball so far. So the best is yet to come for Nelly Korda, just because we've only seen her play three times in 2022, and I expect multiple victories again from Nelly in 2022. And I don't think it's going to be five wins necessarily, but I definitely think it's going to be a couple, and I'd be surprised if she doesn't win a major this year.
And it's a sign of how much expectation we heap on Nelly Korda that the LPGA Tour just started its season in January. They don't have the wraparound luxury of the PGA Tour. And I would expect a lot out of Nelly this year as well, because Nelly has what no one else in golf has, including the PGA Tour, is a rivalry to drive her
exactly
on.
Exactly.
The rivalry with Jin Young Ko we saw really heat up last year. They combined for nine wins between them. They kind of went at each other in several of those tournaments. And you could tell that there's that certain edge to that rivalry that really started to crank up at the end of the year. And I just can't wait to see the next episode of it.
A little bit of what I talked with Hideki, and we were chatting about Hideki, is, you know, when you're good is good, what are you winning by in terms of margin? And when you're going to be a generational type of player like we believe Nelly Korda will be, it's a lot about following up those great years, because you can rest on a great season and you can maybe take a step back if that's what you want to do. I don't see that from Nelly Korda. I feel like she's the type of player that's only trying to improve maybe the parts of her game she didn't love last year. And if she does improve certain things, maybe in and around the greens, I mean, you're talking about scary, scary stuff from Nelly Korda. But I love what you brought up about a rivalry. I mean, that's something that we've been asking for a lot on the men's side of professional golf. We thought we were going to get it with Rory and Jordan. It hasn't quite been what we thought we might get with those two players, but we have it on the LPGA Tour, and I think a lot of people are excited to see where it goes this season.
And her rivalry just isn't with Jin Young Ko. I mean, she's got a rivalry in her own family.
Yes.
Can you imagine what the athletic competitiveness like at the breakfast table in that
family? I don't want to play table
tennis
at that house. I think it'd be a bit scary to jump into that game.
That's really got to drive her along as well with her brother and her sister, not to mention her parents.
Exciting stuff in 2022. Excited to see Nelly out on the golf course again. Well, it is Friday, so we're going to flash back to one of the all-time great finishes and all-time great mustaches on the PGA Tour. We got tournaments that we remember coming your way in just a bit. Coming up on the second hour of golf today, we got updated highlights. Got some Daniel Berger love. Playing some great golf at the Honda Classic. We'll update you on what's happening down in Florida. And we'll flash back to Corey Pavin's 1992 Honda victory. Show some of our favorite highlights over the years from this great event. And like Leo in The Revenant, you get involved with a bear, it's likely you walk away unrecognizable with a recap of round one around the trap. We'll see if that theme holds true for the PGA Tour players.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
1 hour down. We're going to try to improve in hour number two. You ready for that, Eamon Lynch?
Absolutely. It's all about improvement in
this
game.
You know who's trying to improve?
The guy who won last week.
Round one, Joaquin Niemann. Hit it four deep yesterday. He's 4 under through 12. Made a double. Played his last six holes 4 over. That why he sits at even par. But even par, not bad at the Honda. Getting set for his second round, 12:51 p.m. Eastern. Get a chance to watch that live here on Golf. The winner last week at Riviera, back at it. And he was hot early on a Thursday. Shane Eamon, hour number two. Showed you a little Daniel Berger golf from earlier today. He's playing some solid golf. He's very much in the hunt through two rounds here at the Honda Classic. Kind of one of those players on that list when you get away from the Jordans and the Brookses and the Brysons of the world, almost one of those underrated players I don't know if we talk enough about.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of swagger that the results have actually backed up. You know, he does have 5 wins on the PGA Tour. He almost won this tournament here back in 2015. He ended up second, lost a playoff to Padraig Harrington when he hit it in the water. I believe it was on 17 in the playoff. But he's just a very solid ball striker, and he's particularly good around the greens. He leads the PGA Tour in scrambling. He leads the PGA Tour in sand save percentage as well. So the closer he's getting to the business end of the hole, the better he is. His putting has been a little off this year. He hasn't played that much this season, but generally speaking, he's a top 50, top 60 putter, which if you're a good enough ball striker, is usually good enough to put you in the mix.
Expect him to play well when we get to the state of Florida, someone that knows it oh so well. Check in on Mr. Daniel Berger out on the golf course and see what he is doing. This at the 7th, the par 3. Now, this is exact. How about this? I'm yelling at Ari. He's doing the shot sheets earlier in the day. This is 38 feet 6 inches. How exact is that?
Looking like 39 feet to me.
Okay, I'm pretty impressed. I see where you're at, Ari Marcus. I got him to 10 under par, first player to touch double digits here in the 2022 edition of the Honda Classic. Lee Hodges in with a 66, you see there.
There aren't many guys who have gotten to double digits under par in this tournament over the last 10 to 15 years, and there are even fewer who've actually stayed at double digits under par here.
All right, it's Friday. Let's flash it back to one of the all-time great finishes at the Honda Classic. Corey Pavin back in 1992. This at the 13th for a birdie. Makes birdie there. Now at the 14th, his approach. Rocking the stash. Full circle situation. You see, I'd say more mustaches than maybe we should see in the current PGA Tour landscape. Is that fair to say?
I definitely think it's got a certain grandeur to it.
So he doubled the 15th, made bogey at the 17th. This at the 18th, his third from 136 yards on the par 5. A absolute dart.
On the fly.
Did you see the full fist pump? That was like a Tiger fist pump in the fairway.
Well, that eagle tied him to the lead. Got to a playoff against Freddie Couples.
This for birdie. Rams it in the back. Didn't kind of give the full fist bump on that. Just the double fist pump. Go shake Freddie's hand. He talked after his win.
Did I expect to make the last putt? Of course. I wanted to make it because I didn't want to, you know, I checked out of my hotel and everything, and, you know, I'd have to find a hotel room, and, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do tonight, so we obviously weren't going another hole after that.
I feel like you don't totally appreciate how good that mustache is until you see him talking up close and personal. And this is the image you see on the left, Pavin back in the 90s, and Max Homa posting this on social media. Dad, I mean, they look very, very similar.
And I think Max Homa would like Corey Pavin's record by the time he
yes,
gets
he
deeper
would.
Into his career as well, yeah.
Win something at Shinnecock for sure. Now, Corey Pavin jumped on Twitter as well. Yes, son, with a little laugh. That's the stuff we want. This is what we want. We want this interaction on social. Past the present, even
generational
the future as well. And still, the mustache full circle. Take it back to some of the tournaments that we remember. This, of course, Jack Nicklaus back in 1978, his approach at the 18th.
This was when he made 5 straight birdies to finish and win that year.
One of those, birdie putt to win. Now, he looked like he wanted to go uppercut, and he kind of stopped mid-celebration. You see that?
And the guy he beat
you
there.
You asked for this one, Eamon.
Haler won 1982 at the old TPC Eagle Trace from the trees. He was tied for the lead with George Burns and Tom Kite, the defending champion, who had just won at Bay Hill the week before.
Unbelievable.
Hale closes it up. 40 years ago. Makes his birdie, gets his win.
Now, I showed you that Pavin win in 92, the playoff over Fred Kumples. So you go back the next year, 93, with a shortened event because of weather and wind. No problem there for Fred Kumples. So he loses a playoff in 92. He bounces right back and wins in a playoff in 1993. Nice way to answer.
We're seeing a lot of different golf courses here because the Honda Classic has moved around more than someone in the witness protection program. Here's another golf course, Country Club of Mirasol.
Added to the list.
Across the street from PGA National, Luke Donald. Long iron into the last. Got a two-stroke win over Jeff Ogilvie. And as Johnny Miller said after that shot, turn out the lights. This party is over.
Done and done. Go to 2012. One of the more iconic finishing holes, considering where they put that hole location late on Sunday. And that, a shot from Tiger, we will remember for a long time. Set up a putt for an eagle from Tiger Woods. He was fired up. Tiger doing what Tiger does.
You ever finish a tournament like that, Shane?
No, not ever, ever, even close to ever. Never. No. The answer is, of course, no. And then one of my favorite shots in Honda history. That flag stick looks like it's floating. You've got to be crazy to take that flag on, or you got to be Rory McIlroy. I mean, there's a reason I call him the best fairway wood player in the world. For shots like that, he was so fired up. He was actually so fired up that he did not make the putt. But we're only talking about that swing.
And then people wonder why he took on that shot in Dubai a few weeks ago when you can hit fairway woods like that. That's what you do.
JT in 2018. Can't believe it didn't drop. The putt would, and the celebration to follow.
Then in 2019, Keith Mitchell and a birdie for the win.
This was great. His reaction, what you want to see. Pulling it off when you need to pull it off. Make the putt, you get the trophy, you get to celebrate, make your season. And it's a great finishing hole, par five, of course, so look at how it's played over the last five seasons. One of the easiest holes on the golf course. So you get beat up in the bear trap, you know, some of these tough par threes coming in, and then you get a par five to close. And I will say this, you've got to make birdie. I mean, it feels like you have to make a score on this 18th hole, considering the way this golf course leads you into that par five.
Sure, we've seen that many dramatic moments, but we haven't seen many dramatic par putts to win on that hole. And it's a little bit of grace to get the 18th hole as a reasonable birdie opportunity and even an eagle opportunity when you've just been slapped around for the three holes before that.
You think about closing par fives, it's something we don't always see. We don't see it in major championships all that often. You know, typically it's that tough brute of a par four, right? 460, 470 yards. But it's always nice when we get a change, when we get that par five to close. Everybody can bring up Pebble Beach, but I go back to Chambers Bay, and you think about that U.S. Open Championship, Dustin shot into the 18th, the par five, and then you get Jordan Spieth shot into the 18th, the par five. I mean, both excellent approaches and chances to walk off a U.S. Open with an eagle putt. It adds something. And then you go back to Jason Day trying to hold off Jimmy Walker at the PGA Championship, makes an eagle going two iron, two iron at Baltusrol. There are some great closing par fives that add a little bit of excitement.
Baltusrol, certainly, when you go back all the way to Jack Nicklaus in 1967, hitting one iron onto that green from 245 back in the fairway straight uphill. And years after that, a colleague of mine went with the club champion and the club pro with an old replica of Jack's one iron and a modern golf ball, a Pro V1, and tried to recreate that shot. And the best any of them could do was put it in the front edge of the front bunker, shy of that green. So it's a little sign of just how good Jack was back then.
Liverpool is kind of a sneaky close, par five. I still go back to when Rory McIlroy won his Open Championship there, and I remember thinking, why is he taking this shot on? That OB sneaks in around that green, and he was hitting two iron into that 18th green. You're thinking, just lay it up, man. Five plays here, five wins the claret jug for you. When the finish ends on a par five, it allows an eagle to catch a leader. And that is what's so cool about the golf courses. I don't think every golf course needs a par five to close, but when we get that opportunity, you saw the Tiger 3 to finish in the fist bump and the celebration. It at least gives people the hope of catching whatever number's been posted.
And I think that's even fun for recreational golfers as well, who are playing their own matches. Two of my favorite golf courses in the world end on par fives: Cabot Cliffs up in Nova Scotia, an old Kerr Crenshaw course, and Diamante, which is a terrific Davis Love golf course down in Cabo. It used to be the 17th. The old 18th wasn't so impressive. Now the terrific 17th is the closing hole. And to me, it adds a little bit of drama, whether it's guys playing for a living or if you're playing for $5 against your buddies.
The old kind of design theory around Scotland was to make that opening hole kind of a friendly handshake. And something I love, you mentioned Bill Corr and Ben Crenshaw, something I love that they've brought back is that kind of ending to the round also being a bit friendly. And you think about Sheep Ranch, I mean, it's a 475, 480-yard par 5 to close. What a good feeling when you walk off a golf course and you had a putt for eagle or you had a putt for birdie or you made a birdie to close. What better feeling to want to return to that golf course?
And those guys have the luxury now with modern equipment and engineering to be able to create great closing holes, which you almost never see a great course in Scotland or Ireland that either starts or ends on a wonderful hole, because that was always the flattest piece of ground upon which they had built the clubhouse. So it just got you away from the clubhouse and it brought you back, and all the great holes were somewhere out there in the dunes. But these days, I think you tend to see a lot more great closing par fives that put a real exclamation point on the round.
It just helps. I mean, it's just a change and it's something different. And when you think about Pebble Beach and the opportunity there at the last to make a number, to make a three potentially, we haven't seen a whole bunch of eagle walk-offs on that golf hole in particular, but the opportunity is there. You have to hit two good golf shots to even find the surface on 18.
Sometimes you don't even really see great birdies there anymore. It always seems to me that the greens on Pebble are so small that it doesn't really allow for that attacking par five opportunity on the last. I mean, the most iconic hit that green in two that I can remember was Jack's last round at that US Open, when he hit the green and then three-putted after that. But, you know, that was an iconic moment where Jack managed to sneak it on the front. But you don't see anybody really getting up over that front bunker anymore, to that right side of the green.
And especially if you have the lead, no reason to take that on considering how small that green is at Pebble Beach in the 18th. All right, more to come on golf today. Mention the bear trap. Listen, when the Honda happens, numbers happen. And it happens because these holes are very, very hard. We'll talk about the bear trap and who struggled when we return.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life.
Back on Golf Today, kind of a time of the year where we bring up Jupe Life. Eamon, that's something that you've experienced. I'm not much of a Florida guy. You've experienced Jupe Life.
I will be this weekend as well. I don't have those sunglasses there that Koepka is sporting. And here's his Hugh Hefner look.
How would you describe Brooks's approach to non-golf life?
There's his dog, Cove. I think he gets the most out of life.
Okay.
Really? He seems to enjoy himself. His fiancée, Jenna Sims. What age does he have to stop wearing the baseball cap backwards?
You don't. There's no stoppage to that. That continues on. I'm cutting my jogger wearing off at 40, so I got two more years of that. But I think you can go backwards half of your whole life.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You're out on it.
I'm out on that at a certain age.
We've got some first round highlights from Mr. Brooks Koepka. This at the 15th, the par 3, 20 footer for birdie. That one would drop, get him to 1 under par. Now at 18.
Par 5, his third shot, putting from off the green.
You see, Joaquin Neiman was like in another world there. Did you see that? He's thinking about that win, the
taking
trophy.
Care of his business.
What the bank account looked like on Tuesday, something.
That got Koepka to 2 under par. Here he is on the third, par 5.
I'd say underrated around the greens is Brooks Koepka. Look at the guy and you think about power and strength and his ability to hit the golf ball. Got very soft hands. At the 7th, that left would make bogey there. Still a very nice round for Brooks Koepka, considering the event and the golf course. 2 under par, 68, about where Brooks Koepka thought it should be.
Yeah, I didn't do anything to really deserve to be 4 or 5 under. I mean, that's a great score here. So just kind of ho-hummed it around and I mean, like I said, didn't really deserve anything worse, didn't deserve anything better.
Kind of laying out the approach to Honda Week. It's about how you'd like to start, 2 under par 68 on this tough golf course, getting prepared to go back out there and give it another run.
Especially when he hasn't played particularly well consistently recently. He missed the cut at Genesis Invitational last week. Before that, he was tied third at the WM Phoenix Open. Does have a good record here, though. 3 years ago, he finished tied second. It's a hometown event for him. He grew up in West Palm Beach.
Koepka trying to find that consistency as we get closer and closer to the big events, the ones that Brooks circles on the calendar. Of course, we got Players coming up. We got the Masters coming up. And then we get that summer run with the PGA and the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. And Brooks Koepka has not shied away from the fact that that is where he separates himself mentally and physically and just in terms of the approach to those golf courses and what they ask of his game and his skill set. Don't have to go out there and shoot 64 to be considered in the hunt. It's like this, where you shoot 68 and you're right there.
Yeah, and he's going to need to improve a couple of areas of his game as he moves towards those career-defining events. In strokes gained off the tee this season, Brooks ranks 99th on tour versus 7th last year. He's never been outside the top 30 in that category in his entire career. And a strokes gained approach this season, he's 136th versus 25th last year. And when you look at particularly the wedge distances from 150 yards and in, he typically is hitting it about twice as far away from the hole as the players who lead each of those distance categories on tour. So there are areas that he definitely needs to tighten up. He's putted fairly well recently, which he wasn't doing so much last year, but the ball striking just isn't quite there yet.
Is Brooks the guy that dives into those things, looks at those types of numbers, you know, kind of eats all the information that's available on the table?
I think he would be conscious of the information, but he's definitely not a technical player in the same way that Rory McIlroy is not a technical player. If a coach starts telling them technical stuff, their eyes kind of glaze over. They do things really, really well without necessarily knowing or needing to know exactly how they do things really well.
I paint. I don't need to tell you about the paint brushes. This is what I do on the canvas. Waiting for another run from Brooks Koepka, waiting for the health to be back and now the game to get back, and Damon's point, just parts of the game he wants to tighten up. I feel like this is a week he likes. Oh, you know, a lot of the big names don't show up at the Honda. They understand how tough it'll be for 4 days. Brooks seems to embrace this golf tournament, this golf course.
Gets to sleep in a new bed, in a new house. He just moved house a couple of weeks ago up into Cuesta. And he doesn't have distractions at the moment. He's not feuding with anyone on social media right now. He's not poking the bear at all. So perhaps his focus is kind of where it needs to be right now.
Well, both Koepkas in the field this week. Younger brother Chase shooting a 1 over 71 on Thursday. That's exactly why social media exists, for photos like that. That's awesome.
You got to love the white tube socks right there. That's why you should never let your parents anywhere near social media, because they will end up posting things like this.
That's a good look. Hat facing forward, to your point. Talking siblings, Lexi, middle of a six-week lull in her LPGA season, out of PGA National on Thursday, cheering on her big brother, Curtis, who's a tour rookie. Curtis making highlights a day ago. This at the sixth, the par four, 204 yards away.
There's not been an eagle at this hole at the Honda Classic since it moved here in 2007. Strike that off the list of things yet to be accomplished.
And a nice start, even par 70 around PGA National. This on social media, courtesy of the Korn Ferry Tour, Curtis and Lexi at the PGA National. See in 2014. Watch her older brother earn Korn Ferry Tour card at Q School. Now she's watching her brother as a PGA Tour member. Very cool stuff. Joaquin Niemann kept the momentum going for a bit yesterday, was 4 under par, dropped some shots late. He's at even. It was a 12:51 Eastern.